childhood, brainwashed by the school, brainwashed by our teachers, and brainwashed by all the rules, brainwashed by our leaders, by our kings and queens, brainwashed in the open and brainwashed behind the scenes.
Is highly confused.
He's an automaton.
Let's challenge his shattered view of the world.
Here's a little edge for the never believer. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why would you build a grave? No one loves things we know.
We have
to stand up for truth.
Why
would you turn away to? You saw all of the things that's wrong. Would you stand tall and strong? Or would you turn and walk away? What would you do if you knew all the things we knew?
Love is the only truth, everything else is illusion.
I'll pick up your hand and slowly blow your little mind. Cause I've made my mind up.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free. Come together right now.
Oh, no.
We are on the air, and it's Thursday night live. Welcome to everyone who is listening to 33rd Parallel News. We're watching Lost tonight. Very interesting. It involved cartoon fakery. It was a flight Oceanic 815 TV fakery. They're broadcasting fake pictures, obviously computer animated, of Oceanic Flight 815 at the bottom of the ocean, when everyone knows it crashed on the magic Lost Island.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Evan?
Yes.
Hi, this is Jeff calling again.
Oh, hey, Jeff. How are you?
Hi, good. I was hoping to maybe get a few minutes of your time today.
Yeah, I'm actually, I've been kind of busy lately.
Like a couple minutes, like I just wanted to ask you like a few questions about your video.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm just wondering, for what purposes do you want to know this information?
Well, it's just like I looked at your video and it was kind of odd, like the angle that you had the camera at. I was just wondering, like if you were laying down or what.
Like I was just holding it at a low angle.
You were holding it like...
I had a wide-angle lens on it.
Were you crouched down or anything like that? Or?
I think I was like, you know, kind of bent over from the waist.
Yeah, and, like, I remember you were on an interview, I think, with Connie Chung or something. You said you seen a white flash?
Yeah.
Did you see the plane go when it came in?
And we are listening to Jeff Hill from PumpItOut.com. He is interviewing Evan Fairbanks. Evan Fairbanks shot what appeared to be a plane melting into the World Trade Center, and it appeared on ABC News very soon after. And in the interview, Evan Fairbanks said it looked like a bad special effect, which is very interesting. And part of the story behind it is that he was handed the camera This is what he said in other interviews, that he had never even seen or touched this camera before it was handed it to him by the production company for the Church of England, where he went to go film an event there in southern Manhattan. And he grabbed it and looked up and got this image. So let's go back to that. We need to reconnect something that will enable us to take telephone calls, and we will analyze this very interesting interview by pumpitout.com. So let's get back to that.
Yeah.
Like, did you hear it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just came out from behind a building.
Yeah.
The buildings that were on my left. So I didn't see it, like, coming in from the north and then circle around. It's just I saw it for literally a third of a second.
Like, did you hear it
before
you
behind the building? So, you know, at first it was I just saw this white flash in my viewfinder.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, wow, that's a plane.
Yeah, I also remember you had stated, I think it was to Peter Jennings or something, that it looked like a bad special effect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just kind of an unbelievable thing to see.
Well, like the building just kind of like ate the plane. It just went like consumed it. It went right inside. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
It hit with such force, you know, and it went in. It seemed seamless.
Like, I don't know if you look on the internet at all and see all the controversy about 9/11.
Oh, yeah, I do.
And there's a lot of people that believe. And, like, the videos of the planes are showing something unrealistic. Like an aluminum plane going inside a building and not, like, when it hits, it doesn't crumple or anything like that. Like, is that really what you saw or what? Like, I know you had said something about the FBI had taken your camera and took you somewhere or something.
No, they had, I ran into them and they wound up, having my tape.
Before you were able to look at it again, or?
No. I was able to look at it. They let me make a copy of it.
And you didn't have any sound or anything on your video? Like, there was no audio for it or anything?
Well, I had accidentally turned off the microphone.
Yeah.
Kind of like a operator error, because it was the first time that I had ever used that camera.
Yeah. And you just happened to be at that spot at that moment, like?
Yep.
You were at Trinity Church doing something with
I was working for Trinity Church doing some videotaping.
And what was the reflection of the plane coming off of? You could see the reflection of the plane coming off?
Windshield. It was the windshield of the car that the guy was leaning against.
And so the guy was just standing there leaning against the car?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was like an FBI agent
listening
or something?
He was listening to that radio.
Mm-hmm. Because,
I don't really know who he was.
Yeah. But it's just like, there's a, you know, the all the videos of the plane, the Hezarkhani footage, all the footage, it looks, you know, it's unrealistic of a plane hitting a building. A lot of people are just wondering of, like, what really happened, if anybody would
be. One of those people, Jeff?
Well, yeah, like, I still believe in the laws of physics and Newton's laws, and, like, it's, I don't know, I was hoping maybe, like, you sounded, like, the way you looked on TV and the way you were talking about it, like, maybe you had something that you wanted to tell that you weren't able to tell or something. I don't know.
No. I was there, and it happened just the way it looked.
So you heard the plane coming before it actually, you actually caught it in your viewfinder or anything?
No, because the sound was baffled by the building that I was behind.
Yeah.
But I certainly heard the explosion.
Yeah.
When it hit.
Mm-hmm. And so...
So are you making a film, or are you a writer, or what is your affiliation?
Oh, I just... it's just my own personal interest. Like, I've been looking into it for a long time now, and I've just...
Do you have anything online?
Well, there's a few videos online if you wanted to look at... one called, if you go to livevideo.com, you could look up September Clues, You can also look up another video called 9/11 Taboo, which you could find on live video. If you go on YouTube, you could find some videos called 9/11 Amateur. Actually, there's one of your video on there, too. It's called 9/11 Amateur Part 3. And it just talks about how, you know, like the plane seamlessly melds into a building, like an aluminum plane shouldn't be able to do that. I also remember you had said it seemed like it was, there was like a hangar, like a cutout of the building where the plane just went in.
Yeah, I mean, it was, that was just kind of, you know,
mm-hmm.
like verbal visualization, you know, just that that's the appearance it made. That's, it just, because it you know, because of the force of the impact, I mean, that, you know, it didn't really seem like that, you know, I was just kind of, it was a little bit of a creative license.
Yeah, and there was also, like, the whole point of that, like, people were wondering where you were standing, because it looks like you're almost like in a manhole or like laying on your stomach with the video camera being held up or something to get that kind of angle.
No, it was a pretty conventional angle for a shot like that. I mean, I had to be low down looking up because I had to have a guy in the foreground who was 5 feet off the ground, and I still had to have in the shot the buildings that were, you know, 1,100 feet in the air. So I had to be pretty low down looking up. So luckily, I had a wide-angle lens, so I was able to feel it down at my knees with my, you know, bent over at the waist, maybe with my knees bent a little, and get that shot.
And was there, like, anything strange that sticks out from that day? Like, you were around when the buildings collapsed and everything? Like, anything that sticks out?
Not really.
No?
I just have to ask you a question. Are you recording this conversation by any chance?
Yeah, actually, I am.
Okay, well, I don't authorize you to use anything that I'm telling you in any kind of published form in any way. I just want you to know that.
Okay, well, is there any way that you might be able to, just between me and you, tell me what really happened?
I mean, you know, I really don't want to continue having this conversation if it's being recorded. So, and I, to be honest with you, I don't really appreciate you doing that surreptitiously.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, I just want to state that I'm not, you know, you're not authorized to use anything that I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I stop recording the conversation, will you tell me what really happened?
I really can't. You know what? First of all, I'm in the middle of work, so this is not really a good time to chat. Like, I'm happy to talk with somebody who's just kind of interested in what happened on that day and my observations, but I'm really not interested in participating in anything that's...
Do you believe the official story that we were told about 9/11?
Yeah, and I'm not gonna answer any other questions. So, listen, I have your number, Jeff, and when I have a few moments and I can think about this a little clearer, I'll be happy to talk to you, and I'll give you a call.
Well, I really hope
What's your last name?
It's Hill, H-I-L-L.
And where do you live?
In Sault Ste. Marie, Canada.
Sault Ste. Marie. Okay.
Well, thank you for your time. I hope you do call me back.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
There we are. And that was Jeff Hill. Yeah, and I had never actually listened to that before it appeared on Revere Radio. That's how raw and cutting edge this all is. But... you know, Jeff Hill knows very well that in Canada it's not against the law to tape your own phone conversations. Of course, the great Richard Milhouse to Nixon and LBJ Johnson did the same thing. So there you have it. We do have a phone line open tonight at 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-REVERE-0. We were expecting a phone call, and we will bring you that phone call. In the meantime, we don't also, you know, sometimes less than the cutting edge can be interesting as well. And we learned today on Democracy Now! That 3/4 of the footnotes from the 9/11 Commission were obtained by using waterboarding, and Amy Goodman pestered Philip Zelikow, but only a little. So that was pretty interesting. Let's listen to that, and then coming up after that, we will probably check in with the Ron Paul legislative update, and we're going to have an interview about Edna Cintron, a victim on 9/11, and what she can tell us. So stick around.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're talking about an NBC report. You can go to msnbc.deepbackground.com to get more information on the report that says that about a quarter of the footnotes, was it, Robert Windrum? The footnotes of the 9/11 report were based on coercive interrogations of prisoners. Robert Windrum is our guest, NBC News investigative reporter, Michael Ratner, Center for Constitutional Rights, and we're joined in Charlottesville, Virginia, by the executive director of the 9/11 Commission, Philip Zelikow. Michael Ratner, I cut you off just before break. Your response?
Well, I was a bit surprised to hear Phil say that you can't assume that the evidence that he had from the interrogations was based on torture. Can I say it 100%? No. But you can say that he based it on Zubaydah, colleague Sheikh Mohammed, and others who we now know were waterboarded. And they're the evidence that's used. So you put two and two together, you get four. You get the fact, essentially, that these people were tortured to get their testimony. And the question that Phil didn't answer for me is, really, when he went back for the next round of 30 questions, did he think that torture might be used to get those answers? And when he had his meeting, which he had with Kane and Hamilton and Tenet, he sat in the room for a number of meetings with Tenet, the head of the CIA, asking about access to the witnesses. Did he ask Tenet whether these people were tortured?
Philip Zelikow, did you ask Tenet whether these people were tortured?
I did not, but that wasn't I wasn't the person who was pushing the issue directly with Tenet. That was more the job of my bosses and the commission, Tom Kane, Lee Hamilton, and other commissioners.
And did they question George Tenet directly? Did they ask him, were these prisoners tortured?
They did not ask him, as far as I know, and now they were present in meetings I didn't attend, but as far as I know, they did not ask him directly what interrogation methods had been used. They asked... They said, we need all the details surrounding this questioning. We need to know how these people were questioned. We need much more details. We want to talk to the interrogators. We want to talk to the people themselves so that we can ourselves assess the credibility of these accounts.
Interrupted in
here we are. We're back up on the air. We have a caller. Anyway, that was. We'll listen to more of that later. We got plenty of time tonight. And they're talking about torture. 3/4 of the footnotes from Philip Zelikow were from waterboarding people at Guantanamo. And we have a caller on. It's the Psy Girl from the Revere Skype chat room, where you go to revereradionetwork.com and click on that. Well, what's up? What do you think of all this Jeff Hill and 9/11 stuff coming out?
Well, I mean, I think Jeff Hill's interviews, this is about the fifth or sixth one of his I've heard. Because I know he calls Michael Hezarkhani, who almost runs away from the telephone at a certain point.
Yeah.
And I was I think we need to package, or Jeff needs to package, all of these interviews on a DVD as sort of, so that they can sort of be the soundtrack for the Fairbanks. I call it the ABC Fairbanks because I think it was shown there first.
Yeah, definitely. I call it the. Church of England ABC Fairbanks.
Right, and there's some wonderful.
He was hired by like the the like second in command of the whole Episcopal Church to film him giving a speech, and he shows up and they hand him a camera he's never seen before, and he points it upwards at 9:02 a.m. and 59 seconds, and,
right?
And this plane goes in there. So,
I mean, I don't know. I think you'd have to do a voice print analysis of of Fairbanks to even tell whether he really sounded like he was concealing and maybe even lying about some of the details.
You know what? I think some people have been running some of Jeff's calls through, you know, some of these voice print software programs you can get. I mean, you know, people will dispute that, but it's pretty
interesting. I have a whole book on the technology. It was published by a former contractor from right down the road at the National Security Agency.
I'm sure.
George O'Toole, his name is, and he developed something called a VSA, Voice Stress Analyzer. It's been sort of repackaged or repatented as VSE, Voice Stress Evaluator. It's been featured in a couple movies. You might remember a film that Albert Finney was in called it was called Wolfen.
Wolfen. I know that one.
Well, it's about the New York City slums being reoccupied by wolves that are coming into the cities and stuff. It's an interesting film, but in it they murders are taking place of prominent figures, real estate developers in New York City, and they suspect that some kind of terrorist group is behind it, and so they've arrested this terrorist group and they're interrogating one of them.
I don't know if you saw Law and Order last night, but the story.
I try to avoid that, but go ahead.
It was about like a subprime murder spree.
You watch it, so we don't have to.
I know, I do. But then listen to this. It was some subprime scamster was involved with the mob. There's this murder spree. And it was this crazy real estate lady, and she was basically like a con woman and like a spree killer. And later on in the show, she managed to convince the Justice Department that she was involved with a terror cell or something she just made up. And of course, they jumped on it. And so she was going to get off on it, but then the New York City police arrested the FBI agents for kidnapping, and they did a prisoner trade.
And so did they actually use one of these devices, a voice stress evaluator or something, in lieu of
something else you said just set me off on that tangent.
That's all right.
This voice stress analysis is very interesting. In fact, I'm going to try to, in a second, post a link in the Revere chat room, because I haven't checked out Jeff's forum, pumpitout.com, about this phone call. But I know he has people there that have been running the calls through a voice stress analysis, so I'm going to get that link up there in a second.
You know, I swear, I mean, if Jeff is looking for a little bit of seed capital, I don't have a lot, but I love getting people off the ground with some of this stuff. He needs to, I hate to use the word commercially viable. I know that's not what this is about, but I'm telling you, I really think there's a whole audience for this stuff out there that is just going to eat it up. He's got this series of interviews. You know, he could show.
He's trying to sell beer to people, which people will always want beer, probably more than
It's
about 9/11.
Oh, now this material has to be packaged. The video and the interviews have to be put together on a DVD. Because the popular culture demands it. Do you understand that?
Yeah,
that's
people need to at least get them up on YouTube. I think a bunch of them are. But someone should probably put it up there, and I bet it will be soon, too.
Right. I mean, most people, I'm sure, are getting stuff off of the Internet anyway. But this is something to me. This is so superior to a crappy, mediocre piece of, you know, fiction like Loose Change. Or even the sort of mediocre 9/11.
Well, you could tell how real that was. Both of those men, you know, were nervous about what's going on. This is serious, serious shit.
The understanding I have, and I don't know if this was confirmed, is that, well, are we talking about the origins of Loose Change? Because basically...
No, I was talking about what we just heard. I'm still kind of blown away by
Evan Fairbanks. Yes, he sounded terrified. He sounded terrified. And Jeff does a brilliant job with these interviews because he has a very, to me, he has this very sort of gentle, empathetic voice. He's speaking slowly. It's like I say, he'd be a fantastic police interrogator. Yeah,
this one was so important, though. I could tell he was a little nervous because he knew it was important. This is very important.
Well, no, the whole idea is to put the subject at ease by sounding vulnerable yourself.
Yeah.
Instead of sounding domineering, and he does that perfectly.
You're right.
You know, and he's drawing them out. He does not want to dominate the conversation, and he doesn't. He just poses a question and lets them, and draws them out, gets them to talk. So much is revealed in the tone of their voice, in the hesitancy, in the repetition of certain phrases, in the changing of the story, you know, and when he calls Hezarkhani, I think Hezarkhani changes his account of what happened a couple of times, you know what I mean, in between running back and forth to the phone. The interruptions, the fact they got to run away from the phone. If you saw something, if you saw a plane fly into the World Trade Center and you knew you saw it, you wouldn't hesitate. You wouldn't hesitate, and if you really filmed it, if you'd taken it on video, you would know that you had done this.
Well, I think the point is that he saw what he saw. He didn't see a plane. He saw it in the camera.
He won't say what he saw. Did you hear? He won't even come out and clarify what he means. And the whole thing is, it's almost like he wants to, I think Jeff is suggesting, you want to tell us what's happened here. You want to tell us the way in which you've been used to propagate this massive hoax. And you have to be able to do that because when you look at the video, we all know it's fake, don't we, Evan? That's what he's saying. We're looking at, come on, Evan.
That's a bad special effect.
Right. It's a cheaply, it's sloppily done.
Well, I don't know if you heard what I was saying at the beginning of the show or if you were watching ABC Disney, again, Disney. ABC, but I mean, this is their number one entertainment show, and a central plot point of tonight's episode in the series is, you know, a fake cartoon plane crash conspiracy being shown on TV to everybody is real. I mean, how much is of that is deliberate, and how much of that is zeitgeist? You know,
that's straight. You know, something that is straight out revelation of the method. They are telling us when they do that, when they write that into a script of one of these stupid shows.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not the same thing because you know they show because the plane is on the island, and what they show the rest of the world is obviously computer animated. I mean, well, you know, that's all they could do anyway. But image of the plane crash at the bottom of the ocean, you know, and there are no survivors, and the, you know, family members can call this special hotline set up by the airline. Meanwhile, we know all these people, I mean, you know, they've been alive for 3 years on TV. So.
Yeah, I wonder if anyone will. Well,
are their friends. They're TV friends, like Friends.
Yeah, is it real? Is that real, or is that part of the? I mean, that's the whole thing, you know. It's like Friends, you know. Through TV, is it a virtual friendship? Is it a real friendship? Is it, you know? They showed Network again on Turner Classics.
Great film.
Last week, and every time I see it, I appreciate it more and more for its prescience. I would like to see Wild Palms shown again. I'm going to see if I can get a copy from eBay or something. I'm sure it's out there.
I bet you could get a VHS off of eBay. But it showed, Sci-Fi Channel did replay it a few years ago. I think they played it more than once. It's probably been a couple years, but I think they played it once every 2 years or so for a few years there. I don't know if it...
That's vintage mid-90s CGI. My impression is that Oliver Stone used whatever cutting-edge stuff was available to him at that time. Am I thinking early 90s or late 80s? Now I'm kind of... No, it was after JFK. Mid-90s.
Yeah.
It was after JFK, so it would have been mid-90s.
It might have been closer to 1990. I'll look it up right now, but go ahead.
Well, and I can tell you right now, because JFK came out in 91, 92, So it would have been either 92, 93, 94 he came out with Royal Palms. Jim Belushi is in it, Angie Dickens, just a very expensive million-dollar cast, and it was promoted as a miniseries on television.
93.
You see these things disappear, though. Like as I say, like that that made-for-television movie miniseries they did based on a hypothetical invasion of the United States, an occupation and takeover by Soviet and East German forces under the rubric of the UNSSO,
America,
the United Nations.
K.
Yes, America. What is it? United Nations Special Services Organization. You see these black helicopters. You remember that? That's the most, one of the images I remember from that miniseries was these black helicopters flying in with these guys in kind of, almost Star Wars. Well, now they're the regular SWAT outfits you see, but in those days they look like Star Wars outfits to me, in black. And basically it shows how a post-Soviet takeover of the United States, how people adapt and they adjust, you know, and they go back to everyday life.
I preferred Red Dawn.
Well, Red Dawn's kind of more, that's John Milius, I think, right?
Yes, and it was also the first PG-13 movie.
Is that right? I didn't even the ratings, that rating category was, it didn't exist before that film.
I believe so. It was inspired by Gremlins, but Red Dawn was the first one that got the rating.
By the way, guess who appears in one of the Gremlins series? One of the figures in the real-time TV fakery. Who works for Fox, Eric Shawn, S-H-A-W-N, Eric Shawn. This is
Shawn,
a perpetrator, yeah. Perpetrator I'm identifying, a media perp I'm identifying by name here. He works for Fox. He's on Fox.
Oh, yeah, he did some of those fake man on the street interviews in Southern Manhattan, right?
He's somebody who Jeff Hill ought to get in an interrogation room with. I'd like to see him interrogated. He's the one who's
got more good calls than him. I really wish he knows he has an open invitation to come on this program. He just he never does.
We ought to start a movement of people. I mean, I don't think anybody could do it as effectively as Jeff does, but more people ought to be we don't want to start a telephone harassment campaign. That's not what we're after here. The fact that he's up there in Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, makes it possible for him to do this. And you know, we all know that these laws that they passed,
did
they didn't
pass. Threatening tone in the guy's voice. He's like, who are you? Where are you?
Oh, yeah, real nervous. Real nervous.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that these interviews that he's done, together with the videos themselves, make a documentary. I mean, you could do a 45-minute, hour-long
document, for that matter.
Well, to me, they're evidence. To me, they're pure evidence.
Exactly.
You know, you wouldn't even need to call these individuals as witnesses. All you need to do is get them to sign affidavits saying, yep, that's me on that tape. And play it, because it tells the story. And then you show the visuals. You show the fakery. The thing that gets me is it's the instances of really, really grotesque and transparent TV fakery. I don't understand why there hasn't been a mass uproar about it. Some of it is so transparent. I the first time I looked at it, I thought, that's ridiculous. It's insulting. The Purdue cornflake simulation. Purdue University released what they claimed was a simulated image of what a Boeing going through the tower would have looked like. And they've literally got the wings slicing through steel columns with zero in, like a samurai blade, right? Like a hot samurai blade through a stick of butter. Unbelievable. And this is, now understand,
like
this
Benihana's.
Is... Like the Ginsu, you know? The plane wings just slicing right through the steel. Steel reinforced concrete in the tower, like a Ginsu, all the way in there, you know, disappearing in there. Now, remember, this is not something that has been released by the physics or the engineering or the material science department at Purdue University. No. The Purdue simulation is a product of the computer science department.
Of course.
And, right, it doesn't purport to be reality. It doesn't purport to be a visual representation of anything within the realm of physical possibility, at least in the universe where Newton's laws apply. But it's been released by the...
It's where they write the software to upload into the Matrix.
This is pseudoscience. This is what the Nazis did. They manufactured scientific disinformation. This is what, of course, was classic in Stalin's Russia with some of, you know, the claims that were made for Lysenko's theories and, you know, Nazi race science and everything else. And that's what this is. This is Nazi. I refer to the people who produced the staff of the computer science department at Purdue University, and this means something to me. I have a master's in computer science. I studied with some of the top people in the field at places like University of Maryland and Hopkins. To see these guys at Purdue debasing, degrading, dragging the reputation of American academia through the dirt, through the mud, there will be no forgiveness for this. There will be no forgiveness. They have destroyed the institutional credibility of Purdue, not just Purdue University,
what university hasn't? What about right before you came on, and we'll play more of it later, Philip Zelikow, who's inflicted
he's been hired
on the University
to teach.
Of Virginia.
Yeah, founded by Thomas Jefferson.
It's horrible. Well, they did get rid of him. I think I listened today, and Amy Goodman got it wrong when she said he was still there. I think he's working for Condi Rice again. Just in another position.
Zelikow's
back with Condi.
Right. But Zelikow's specialty is, of course, the field of myth, what he calls historical myth.
I know.
He wrote his doctoral thesis.
It's on his Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And actually, I've posted on total911.info, I'll put a link up, an interview from the UVA Alumni Magazine with him where he says some of the same things, and also from Wikipedia, you can find the article where the newsletter published by UVA, which Wikipedia has. Those are his most damning quotes, just when he opens his fat mouth.
Is he not even a controversial figure on that campus?
He's not there anymore, so I don't know.
Okay, so he's moved on.
He was there. Yeah, he went back and forth, I think, but he's gone now.
That's just so, because so you're saying this interview must have, the reason why I'm asking is it means that this Pacifica interview that Amy Goodman conducted with him, which was really just an excuse to interview the New York Times propagandist, Shan, whatever his name is, and nobody remembers him. This guy that has written this book.
Actually, now that I think of it, back what I was saying, Lawrence Eagleburger, Kissinger's buddy, was all hooked up in that same center at UVA. So that's where a connection is. But go ahead. I just want to throw that in there to finish my previous thought.
Yeah, I can get into Eagleburger for a second or two also, because Norman Finkelstein has done some really great, published some really revealing stuff about Eagleburger profiting off of Holocaust, the massacres that took place in Europe during World War II.
That doesn't surprise me. He of course was he was Secretary of State for Poppy Bush, and before that, Assistant Secretary.
Right, his hands are dirty with supplying the Indonesian thugs that suppress things on East Timor and other things. There's a whole history to. He's another evil. He's up there with Brzezinski. To me, he's up there with Brzezinski, Kissinger, Holbrooke, Madeleine Albright. Well, Madeleine Albright's more of sort of a front woman. I don't know that she really makes any decisions that matter.
She's a ditz.
Yeah.
Her father was a player. Her father was Condi Rice's favorite professor.
Is that right?
Her mentor. So.
You know, it was mentioned at one point that Stanley Hilton, who supposedly filed a lawsuit on behalf of some 9/11 victims' families, claimed that he had been a classmate of Zelikow's.
I don't think Zelikow. I think he was at University of Chicago with people like Pearl.
Oh, Wolfowitz.
Wolfowitz.
He claimed he went to school with Wolfowitz.
Yeah, Wolfowitz and one or two other ones in grad school at Chicago, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But there was someone else I was listening to said he went to school with Zelikow. Maybe it was one of these.
I'm not sure where Zelikow even went to school. I can't think right now.
It might have been a writer for The Nation or one of those people. But what I'm getting at here is it sounds to me like the Specifica interview was conducted a while back.
I have to listen to it again, and we'll play it later. But I think it was current, if it wasn't live today, because it was about the questions that have been raised in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Week. Maybe it was a week old, but.
Yeah. Well, because they say, well, he's teaching now at the University of Virginia, and I think that's kind of curious.
I think she just fucked up. I think they're sloppy.
Now, that's interesting, too, and that's worth knowing. That's worth knowing that if Amy Goodman is such a total fuck up.
Well, you know, maybe I'm wrong.
In addition to being a liar and a Ford Foundation prostitute, I'm saying this publicly. If anyone wants to record it and post it, I wish they would. I'm calling Amy Goodman a Ford Foundation funded prostitute who's parroting lies and propaganda manufactured by the military industrial complex and doing so knowingly, as she did, in effect, in this interview with Philip Zelikow. Because she essentially buttressed, and this is the interesting thing, the game that these faux leftists, or progressives, whatever the hell they want to call themselves, this is the psychological game that they play. It reminds me of the Claude Rains character in Casablanca, who comes into Rick's American Cafe and says he's shocked to see gambling going on in here. These guys, you know, they confront Philip Zelikow and they say, oh, we're shocked to hear that you're using waterboarding, you're using torture. And meanwhile, they know all along that 9/11 was an inside job. They know that. Amy Goodman watched WTC7 blown up.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, she knows, she's had as much opportunity to look at this fake video that was broadcast by ABC and the ghost plane broadcast by CNN. She's had plenty of opportunity to look at this stuff. Don't tell me that somebody in her position in the media and people around her have not looked at this stuff. So I don't buy anything she says. I think she's a liar. I think she sold her soul. And the whole idea is that they pretend to be shocked about torture, and really their purpose is, from the left, to prop up the big lie of 9/11, to prop up the official myth of 9/11. And that's the irony of this.
Well, does that mean next someone gets to, like, even just to pick someone like, you know, Dick Cheney, can we waterboard him and write our own report using footnotes from that?
Well, I'll tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, I don't feel bound to honor the constitutional rights of any of these criminals. They destroyed the United States Constitution. Now, I'd like to see it restored. I'd like to see the Bill of Rights restored. I'd like to see a republic restored
here in North America. They have a constitutional right to be executed for treason, I think.
You're right. You know something? These people could be arrested, indicted, interrogated, tried, convicted, sentenced, and executed under the very laws
of jury, not some of these. There have been so many bullshit, all of them bullshit, 9/11 grand juries. I got shanghaied into one of them. I didn't even know what was going on. That's how bullshit they are.
It was
too stupid.
Kim Hoffman
and controversy. No, no.
The one out in San Diego.
No, No. It was so retarded that no one ever even heard of it. I mean, most people fall asleep during it. But I mean, you know, that's how delusional some of these people are. But you need to somehow.
You're not going to see this stuff brought before a military tribunal or an internationally designated tribunal like they did in Rwanda, where they put the media on trial.
Should camp outside,
without the muscle.
The federal courthouse in southern Manhattan, where the juries come and go, and just hand everybody who walks in and out just huge stacks of information.
That's a great idea.
The legal power to do this, 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 and that, but you need a shitload of people. because, you know, if you don't have enough people, they'll just arrest them.
Actually, I think people have been arrested for passing out literature.
I know, that's why you need, like, a critical mass.
And, you know, I mean, the instance that I remember where threats were made was during the Moussaoui trial down in Alexandria, mm-hmm. where this corrupt judge, Leonie Brinkema, was presiding.
Yeah, and I know, some people showed up there for a press conference and they moved them around and told them where to stand and all this stuff.
Well, I know somebody personally who was there with a sign, a little 8x10 hand-lettered sign that said, I think it said 9/11 was an inside job, something along those lines. Sitting there on a park bench in the middle of the plaza, threatened by Phil Berg and by somebody named Constable Bradway.
Threatened by Phil Berg, really?
Yeah. Yeah, because he came out and said that...
He's an 9/11 lawyer, plaintiff's lawyer for the audience.
Yeah, for Ellen Mariani, yeah. Or was for Ellen Mariani.
She got rid of him.
Yeah, now he works with William Rodriguez, who's another... story in himself, Willie Rodriguez.
I think even Rodriguez got rid of him. But, for holding a sign in the wrong place because he wanted to comply with the orders. Okay. That's weird.
So he negotiated, he did a 9/11 on the First Amendment. He negotiated away. Here you got a soccer mom, that's who this woman was, basically a local community activist soccer mom, has the gumption to go down there to stand outside the courthouse with a little sign, and the lawyer who's supposed to be defending the truth, the lawyer who's supposed to be demanding justice, he acts as an agent for the judge in selling off the First Amendment rights of the soccer mom. So to me, what Phil Berg did, and anybody else who you know, I know that Fetzer was there and others, but I had the impression that it was Phil Berg that really was acting as a cop on behalf of the judge. Why did he even negotiate away? And that is what he would do if we had thousands in the streets, millions in the streets, and Phil Berg were representing us, if he were one of our attorneys negotiating.
Well, I don't think he's involved. I really don't think he's involved in anything anymore. So, yeah, I mean,
he's
involved in litigation.
Actually, you know, that's not quite true.
Phil Berg, try to go pro se or know who you're involved with.
Phil Berg has surfaced. He's one of the signatories to that list of people that is endorsing Steve Alton's fictional novel, The Shell Game, which is pushing peak oil. So he hasn't entirely disappeared, but you're right, he's not doing much in court these days, is he?
Oh, that is funny. I didn't know.
He's shelling for The Shell Game.
I mean, no, that's not a legal case. That's just kind of funny okay, whatever.
He's on board along with,
yeah.
He's on board along with Stephen Jones and David Ray Griffin, the prophet himself.
Yeah, I don't think Phil Berg's in.
And most important, Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman is along for the ride as well. Mr. Star Wars, right? The Archbishop Star Wars, the Archbishop of Stargate. He's showing
well, here's
for
the thing. What about I guess you've been following this Hutchison effect as far as Star Wars goes, do you think a Hutchison effect weapon could or would have been space-based, or do you think where would it have been based, do you think? This just kind of popped in my head. Now I'm curious.
First of all, I can tell you something about weapon systems because I'm reading a book that discusses something called small unit fire support. It's called The Art of Maneuver. It was published in the early 90s, and only at the very end he talks a little bit about GPS target acquisition. That is to say, you use satellites for getting a precise target, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the weapon has to be fired from a satellite.
Okay.
The satellite is strictly for target acquisition.
And so the weapon is tied into the same satellite system.
The weapon could probably be used, I would think, from a plane or from an aerial vehicle.
That makes sense. You know what? That also makes sense. That also makes sense for cameras, like military cam. As long as everything is GPS correctly, they can just have a simple cartoon plane.
Yeah, I felt that you know. Delving into the details of whether the weapons were space-based or land-based or some mixture of the two was kind of, you know, it was kind of gilding the speculative lily, because what we're talking about here is classified weapon. They don't even admit, well, they actually, they do admit publicly to the existence of this stuff, because you can go out on the...
Well, there was a story in the news last week that they said it was a spy satellite, but a secret U.S. satellite was about to crash into the Earth. And my question is, why? Did the Chinese shoot it down with a beam weapon?
No, they said it's
Space-based? Did Putin do it?
They said it's malfunctioned.
Yeah.
That's what their claim is.
Right.
Now, maybe the concern is that this is
like
one of those...
Like all the shuttles blow up because they're, like, hit by a piece of gravel.
Could this be one of those nuclear-powered satellites, that, like the Cassini?
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
And maybe that's the real... Why would it be dangerous otherwise, if you think about it? I mean...
It's a problem. What could I mean...
And the other thing, of course, is... Yeah, isn't this thing going to be burned to a crisp from the friction on entry
into the Earth's
gravitational...
I would think so. I just know it was all over the news. Apparently, people could see it. So, I mean, they had to say something. I think that... I mean, in the night sky, it sounded like it was going to hit us, but, you know, there was something moving around... It was kind of bright for a couple of days, and I think that's...
So you're saying because people can see it, they've got to explain it.
Yeah.
If people couldn't see it, no one would know that it had failed.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't necessarily have to report it.
The few people who bother to look in the night sky with the telescope would have easily noticed it.
Right. So you can get on the web, and you can do a... As a matter of fact, this book that I'm reading, which was published... It was originally published right after the so-called Operation Just Cause, the invasion of Panama, which is like 91, 92.
Yeah.
Bush Sr., Il Capo, D20 Capi, as I call him. And in this book, and I don't know, it might be a later edition in 93, but in this book he makes a brief reference to directed energy weapons. So what this tells me is that they existed before 1993. That they had already...
A book by... You said it was by Poppy Bush?
No. This book is by an Army officer named Robert Leonhard.
Okay.
It's called The Art of Maneuver. I picked it up in one of these old used bookstores.
Yeah. Even Bob Bowman said, you know, they're working on it. He said he was working on it for Ford and Carter, or during the Ford and Carter
administration. Right. Right, it's rolling off the assembly line every day. You can go out to the web and you can see the...
It really is now. I mean, the Raytheon public...
Right, I was thinking of Ionitron. Yeah. I-O-N-A-T-R-O-N.
Line, not a metaphorical one.
Right. They are manufacturing directed energy weaponry. They call it man-made lightning.
Well,
man-made lightning.
The thing that intrigues me so much about assembly lines is... Applied Research Associates, which doesn't do, they build prototypes. And when you're kind of a research outfit doing prototypes, and all this is on, it's all on research contracts, so they can build weapons almost totally off the books.
So these people are basically the same guys, Applied Research Associates, is that what they're called?
Yeah, and they're involved with writing the NIST report, and so is...
Right.
SAIC. And also, the SAIC was also in the Zelikow report. SAIC was in both.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at that. I mean, so...
Another kind of research contractor. SAIC.
You know, what's astounding to me is that if we ever do arrest these people, you've got a case where the perps themselves... have conducted the investigation and the cover-up. That's astounding. The people who are involved in the perpetration of these crimes on 9/11 are themselves the ones writing the investigative report, right, the NIST report, staffing the 9/11 commission. They're in control. It's just like the Kennedy hit. They're in control of any and all investigations.
Science Communications International Corporation.
Right. See,
they only build research space-based weapons. Raytheon has the assembly lines of beam weapons. All of the SAIC's multi-billion-dollar beam weapons, that's just research.
I understand also, and curiously enough, this has actually been reported on Pacifica by, of all people, Amy Goodman, who we were just talking about. She herself has confirmed the existence of low-grade, non-lethal crowd control weapons, which essentially used a form of directed energy.
Well, I mean, that's been all over forever. I mean,
right, and they've been used in Europe. They've
been
used
on cable
in France
for 5 years.
Right, and there are other variations as well. I mean, there's something called LRAD, a long-range acoustical device, and there's a picture of it out on the web that somebody got from the demonstrations during the Republican convention in New York City.
There are shows on like the Discovery Channel where they basically just show off. You know, advanced weapons or advances they're allowed to show anybody.
And they're not bashful about it.
Yeah, they've been having these microwave weapons for years on the show.
So I guess the key to the PSYOP is to normalize this stuff, to desensitize us to it. That's what I think the purpose of Pacifica broadcasting that interview with Zelikow and the New York Times hack is to suggest that the only thing that's going on is waterboarding is an insult to our intelligence.
Yeah. Well, there was another story in the AP today. I had a list of stories to read. There's a secret camp inside of Guantanamo that no one knew about called Camp 7 or something.
So the Red Cross hasn't been in there. No one's been in there.
Yeah. Congress hadn't been in there. Red Cross hadn't been in there. You know, for I'll pull up the story, but... you know, almost no one.
Yeah, see, to me, the function of setting up Guantanamo, Bagram, the dungeons in Romania and Poland and some of these other places,
they
wasn't
said
about it.
For the safety of, they didn't want the prisoners who weren't cooperating to beat up the prisoners who were cooperating. So the ones we've heard about, those are the good ones who were cooperating. They were protecting them from the really bad people.
So they're doing it for their own safety.
Secret torture prison.
Yeah. I think the idea is to try for them to selectively filter out military or civilian personnel who maybe are too squeamish for the business of torture and murder, and so select, you might say, a cadre in both the armed forces and the private sector for future use who will torture anybody they're instructed to torture. I don't think it has anything to do with extracting information.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you could discern that from the responses to some of Amy Goodman's questions in that interview this morning. That when you heard some of the things that were said, you realize that they have yet to demonstrate, well, of course it's, so much of this is based around Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, right?
Him and other people, apparently. But, yeah, a lot of it was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Guy they were calling Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I'm sure
right,
after they waterboarded him enough, he said he was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Well, to me, you know,
and
that's like...
You know, Harry Buttle,
yeah.
Harry Tuttle,
yeah.
Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein.
Right. I'll be anybody you want me to be if you... Please stop hurting me. It's like Musali. I understand they had an electric stun belt on him during
the
trial.
Yeah, I think I have that on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/total411info. I got it right off of MSNBC.
I don't know. For some reason, I just wondered what Ron Paul would say about that. I wondered if he would have anything to say about that.
Well, actually, the Musali story is the only is a part where publicly he's dipped his toe into 9/11 because he talks about the you know, the flight school warnings and that issue.
He's talking about this.
Well, Ron Paul's mentioned it before, you know, and he says we should get rid of the FBI, and he points to that as an example. That's the most he's ever said about.
Right, their failure to investigate flight schools. Does he think that would have prevented them blowing up three buildings?
He never really says that. He just uses it. It's a way of turning their own bullshit against them a lot of the time. Like, you know, saying we should arm pilots.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what his motives are. I really don't. I have a hard time figuring out the psychology of Ron Paul, other than you know, I suppose I have to chalk him up to, his case up to, severe denial. Severe denial. And I don't know what good that's going to do us under the circumstances.
Well, he's not going anywhere, so it'll be interesting to see what happens between now and,
Well, it's interesting you mention that because, you know, I've been surveying the Paul blogs today in the wake of the announcement that Romney has suspended his campaign. And I have to tell you, there's a lot of very intense discussion that goes on in some of the Ron Paul blogs about things like the plans of the Iranians to, again, to open their oil bores.
Well, yeah, that's all stuff Ron Paul's talked about on the floor of the House, and he's also mentioned there could be a false flag event to, like, the Gulf of Tonkin to trigger a war with Iran.
Right, he has raised that prospect, and I have to say this about Paul. In at least one debate, he mentioned that, in his view, the real reason that we were taken to war in Iraq was because of Saddam Hussein's threat to exclude the dollar as a currency of exchange for the sale of Iraqi oil. And that there was concern that it might have triggered that if, say, Saddam Hussein had been successful in pulling that off, and that would have been strictly for this oil for food program that the UN was running over there. He said he was going to say, I'm not taking dollars anymore, I'm only taking euros, yen, other currency. Ron Paul said that this could have potentially triggered a run on the dollar if, say, Venezuela had gotten together with Saddam Hussein on it, that could have triggered a run on the dollar.
Well, I mean, it's all part of moving towards the America. They're going to call it dollarization probably first, but the supply of dollars is so high, the way they're going to try to balance it back out is increasing the demand, and they're going to do that by getting rid of the peso and the Canadian dollar. And so they're going to say we need to go to the Amero to stabilize the weak dollar. I wouldn't be surprised if something like that comes out. You know, there's a big NAU, North American Union Summit in New Orleans in April. I think people want to check out Guyman Adams Live, hosted by Guyman Adams, on Saturday. I think he's trying to put together a big activist event around that. So keep listening, Revere. Go ahead. Any final thoughts? Actually, I think I'm going to have to let you go in a minute so we can reboot here.
To me, you know, we should pursue this whole thing of, you know, how they transition out of the dollar. I don't know how they're going to do that without creating real psychological vulnerabilities. The dollar, there's so much emotion. You know, in God we trust. People believe in the dollar.
But it'll be after the election, and I think the election is going to be really brutal somehow as well. I don't know how yet, but
everybody's anticipating the next false flag, aren't they? But maybe they won't be that bold. Who can say?
I think they could wait till after the election if it looks like, you know, one of their people is going to get in. The only way.
Well,
but I mean, they could do. You know, Hillary could show, you know, all these CIA videos they have from North Vietnam and on McCain, and I mean, anything could happen.
I think
with a woman and a black guy, and you know, all the crazy people on cable TV. I mean,
well, we'll pursue this further. I think the elections are choreographed, but that's another discussion.
Well, yeah, but it could be a choreographed trauma. Okay.
Yeah.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Thanks for calling in. Bye. And there you go. That was the Psy Girl. I think we have someone else who wanted to call in, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes. And, you know, I guess if you're listening, you can call in 1-877-REVERE-0. In the meantime, we're going to go play some more of this 9/11 coverage from Democracy Now! So check that out. And go to RevereRadioNetwork.com and give money, and go to total411.info and read everything and click on the advertisements.
K
accounts that we're using.
Robert Windrum, let me put a question to Robert Windrum. This issue of the prisoners now saying that they were tortured, coming before a Pentagon tribunal, four of them saying they gave the information only to stop the torture?
At least four, because there was large sections of the testimony of the combatant status review tribunals that was redacted by the Pentagon. Those sections invariably were sections about torture, interrogation methods, however you want to describe it. But at least four of them said, indeed, that they had provided information only as a result of being tortured, and they used the word torture. They did not use enhanced interrogation techniques. They said torture. And two of them, as I recall, said that they recanted what they had said during those interrogations because it was not the truth. And Abu Zubaydah in particular went into detail as to what he had said under torture and what he was now recanting. So you do have now the other issue of a public record, once again, the combatant status tribunal hearing record, which says that there was torture and also that indeed it led to false testimony.
I'd like to ask you, Philip Zuckel, on the issue of the book by Philip Shannon, The Commission, The Uncensored History of the 9/11 Investigation, raises obviously some disturbing criticism in addition about the commission's work. I was struck in particular by the questions he raised about your communications with Karl Rove during that period, and also that the issue of whether you sought to have your secretary remove the logs of your phone calls with Karl Rove during that period. Could you respond to those issues raised by Shannon?
Well, not only can I respond to them, the commissioners actually have responded and will respond to anyone who asks them, because I was authorized by the commission to talk to White House officials regularly, as was the general counsel, Dan Marcus. But on this business of Rove, it's a little ironic, since I don't even really know Rove. We had two brief contacts that had to do with University of Virginia business, because I used to direct the Presidential Research Center. In both cases, we handed off the issues to others. The university actually has records on this matter. I told Shannon all of this. The business about phone logs. Actually, two of the three people who took my calls don't even remember this story. Message slips would be left out on the counter.
Well, let me ask you directly this very straightforward allegation of Philip Shannon, that he said that you called in your secretary, shut the door, informed her she was no longer to keep phone logs of your contacts with the White House. She got so alarmed that she went, thinking it was improper, that she went to the chief lawyer for the commission to alert him about what's happened. Did you tell her not to keep logs of your White House calls?
If someone will just go talk to the chief lawyer of the commission, you don't have to rely on my account of this. I mean, there are other people who have knowledge of these facts, and there's no there.
You're saying you did not tell her?
This is a.
You did not tell her not to keep logs?
There are no phone logs for the commission. The commission had no phone logs. So I couldn't tell her not to keep logs in a situation where the commission didn't have phone logs.
But she kept your logs.
She
kept your logs.
I did not have any phone logs.
So you're saying you did not. This is a completely fabricated story.
This is a garble of a something that's probably come two or three layers removed from people who don't actually understand the way our office worked. But no one in the office thought that I was concealing anything from the commissioners, and the commissioners don't think I was concealing anything from them, because they were briefed on all these contacts.
Well, they're
and they also knew very well what my relationship with the White House was, since, as the commissioners have recently put it, Zelico was the White House's biggest problem. And they, the commissioners, if you just call them and ask them, will point out that I was actually a source of constant trouble for the White House, and the White House had hoped that the commission would put someone else in my job. And in fact, the White House's biggest supporters, like Bill Sapphire, were slamming me in their columns during 2004 because I was leading the commission to knock down the theories they supported.
There appears to be, at least according to Sheehan, one commissioner, Mr. Zelico, Max Cleland, who did raise questions about what was happening in the commission, and he was removed, according to Sheehan, because of his, or shortly after raising his criticisms of what he thought were cover-ups occurring in the commission, he was removed. Is there any accuracy to that Sheehan claim?
He was not removed. Max resigned from the commission. There are commissioners who know very well the circumstances of Max's resignation. And if anyone wants to know more about this, he should talk to them, either Max or Tom Daschle or the commissioners involved, because Max resigned on his own and quite voluntarily for very personal reasons that commissioners know about, but which I was not a part of at all.
One of the points that Philip Sheehan makes in his book, The Commission, is not only your relation...
an accessory to murder. Little bitch, resign! Arm this bitch!
...your ongoing relationship with Rove, but with Condoleezza Rice, which went way back before the commission, of course, that
may
you co-authored
you,
a book with
her. When you say my ongoing relationship with Karl Rove, I had no ongoing relationship with Karl Rove. I've never worked with Karl Rove. I've never had any political dealings with Karl Rove at all
right
in my
now.
Life. So this is... Your question just kind of assumes things that just aren't true.
He talks about conversations that you had with Karl Rove at the White House and also a longtime relationship with Condoleezza Rice, and talks about in the book, he talks about how the staff felt pressured, and that any negative references to Condoleezza Rice in her role in the lead-up to the 9/11 attacks was whitewashed in the report because of pressure from you, her friend, her co-author, longtime colleague.
But, you know, Shannon doesn't say that.
Well, he does argue.
Shannon doesn't say the report was... Excuse me, Shannon does not say the report was whitewashed, quote-unquote,
no, well, let me say that he talks about the pressure that high-level staffers felt when talking, when writing about Condoleezza Rice.
Oh. Well, why don't you, you or any journalist, should call up the high-level staffers and ask them. And ask them whether or not they felt that they were bullied or pressured. The leader of that team, who worked in the Clinton White House, I'll add, has gone on the record with the Associated Press saying that their team did not feel bullied in any way at all. He's happy to talk to any reporter about this. Another member of the staff who plays a very prominent role in Shannon's account wrote to all the commissioners, reached out to all of them, and described Shannon's account as, quote, a case study in hype, close quote. But journalists who want to check this out, go talk to them. You don't have to take my word for it. Go ask them if they felt pressured. Of course, the irony in all of this was at the time, the White House's supporters were denouncing me, and here, 3.5 years later, I'm being attacked from the other side.
Well,
the commissioners themselves don't feel that they were in the commissioners feel that they understood exactly how I was running the commission staff and how I was doing the work. They had they had transparency into what was going on, and I think they can speak for themselves now on the final product.
What Sheehan argues, what he argues,
that any key facts were left out of the report.
What he argues is that you sought to intimidate staff to avoid damaging findings for President Bush, who at the time was running for re-election, as well as references to Condoleezza Rice in any damaging way.
He says, sought to intimidate, quote,
yes,
unquote?
Yes, this is what Sheehan alleges in the commission, in his new book.
Well, anyone who was in the White House at the time would find that accusation ridiculous. But as I say, talk to the staffers. Ask them. Ask them if they thought that I was trying to intimidate them. The leader of the team is happy to talk to any reporters who will ask. What I'm trying to do is I don't want to get in an argument where I'm saying, you know, Shannon says this, Zelikow says that. If you don't have to trust me or take my word for it, go to the commissioners, go to the staffers, many of whom worked for Democratic administrations. I worked for 1 month on a transition team.
Philip Zelikow, we're going to have to leave it there because we're at the end of the broadcast. But I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of the 9/11.
Amy Goodman, not really, but that was pretty interesting. There you have it. And we have on the line with us a caller from the Heartland. Hello.
Hello.
What's going on? This is the Web Fairy, I believe, correct?
Yep, this is the Web Fairy. Rosalie Grable, the Web Fairy, live from Chicago.
And you wanted to tell us tonight about Edna Cintron.
Edna Cintron,
who was a victim of 9/11. And I guess you've made a YouTube movie about it, and you've been involved in other things. So tell us who she was and why we should know
why we ought to care. Edna Cintron spent the last hour of her life waving from the plane-shaped hole in the first hit building. In the first place, she's a perfect proof that there was no plane in that plane-shaped hole, because if there was, you know, there'd be jet fuel and thousands of degrees and not a lady waving to all of the helicopters every time they pass by.
She'd be covering pieces of, you know, stewardesses and Al-Qaeda agents and that one Mossad guy. And
there'd be something going on besides a lady waving. And there's another guy over on her right and upward on a higher floor who's waving also through part of this.
Yeah,
and
because
a couple
it was
other people
diagonal across a few floors.
Yeah, but considering that this was three floors of office with probably like 300 people working, and only one lady waving all the time and a couple of people waving.
Well, so many people didn't go in that day.
From McClellan.
So many places in both buildings.
That would be interesting to know, too. But in the plane-shaped hole, there is no sign of any debris, of any office partitions, of any, of the things that you'd imagine to see in a wrecked office. There's just this huge emptiness, that a great void that was not created with any measurable heat, because within 20 minutes of the creation of this hole, there's people waving from it.
Yeah, unless all the heat just disappeared somehow and, you know, it was an instantaneous.
Well, they'll invent that next. So far, the only excuse they have is that the whole thing is a fake.
Yeah.
Yes, that there was no
Maybe
hole,
was
there
thermite.
Was no explosion. they bring back the thermite. Okay. Well,
there's no plane, but there was thermite. Thermite shaped like a plane.
Whatever, they managed to leave it's a field of Hutchinson effects.
Sure.
It's what you would find after a Tesla weapon.
And by that, what do you mean? And see that people should go to YouTube and search for Cone for Edna.
Web Fairy. The newest one is Making of Meet Edna Cintron, and the original is Meet Edna Cintron. Yeah, but they're all at my account, youtube.com/TheWebFairy, all one word run together.
Okay, great. And what is a cone, K-O-A-N?
What is a cone? If you listen to the horrendous kind of wailing noise that's going on, it's not music, but it's
like Yoko
Ono. Focus one's meditation, perhaps. And it's certainly a meditation on tremendous evil and tremendous sadness. And just watching Edna waving through the last hour of her life keeps me waving through whatever hours I have left, hoping for some helicopter to come and rescue my planet. But it looks to me like these people are more interested in being rendered for oil and their children used for food.
Soylent Green, collagen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they'd rather have a planet with that's running out of oil than to have permanent free energy, as we saw demonstrated in the way that they can poof that building.
Sure. Real quick, getting back, I mean, I probably brought us away there, but if we go to youtube.com/thewebfairy, where can we see the Hutchison effect, which is named after a man named John Hutchison, who was experimenting with Tesla technology, and you know, he said his whole thing is his laboratory stolen by the military and everything else. So what video should we look at to see Edna Cintron and the Hutchison effect?
Any of them. Cohen for Edna is difficult. The new one, Making of Edna Cintron, that's the easiest to watch because the music behind the enlargements is more pleasant. But all you see there, the broken beams and the spaghetti beams and the wilted beams and the missing beams.
And that's the Hutchison effect.
Those are all Hutchison effects. Those are the kind of changes in metal that one would expect to happen at high temperature over long duration of time, but instead happen instantaneously and without heat. That is a Hutchison effect.
And we see, I'm looking right now at some fires, and so you're saying you think those are probably
so-called
cool fires. Like if you look at some of the pictures at drjudywood.com, there would appear to be fires burning, but people are just walking around in the middle of them like there's no heat.
Yeah. Well, I think that the fires that we see above and below Edna on first hit videos of the hole, I think those are real fires in the distant floors. Mm-hmm. And that's why she couldn't get down, is that there's fires underneath her. But whatever created this was oxygen sucking. It's a thermobaric is the name for it. But whatever made that big showy explosion sucked out all of the oxygen so that no fires could start near the center of where this happened at.
Mm-hmm.
The only fires could be in the far distance where the oxygen hadn't been sucked up into the explosion.
Interesting.
There are some now of these might be cold fires that are farther, closer, nearby to where Edna's waving from, but still they're on a different floor from her, and that might not be that, but instead be the guy with the orange shirt. I can't be sure.
Okay, well, maybe people can take a look and figure out for themselves. And what's interesting is you got, it's footage that really hasn't been seen much in America. One is from the BBC and one is from France, too.
Yeah, it has been seen in Germany and in France, but was never televised in America, that I know of yet, anyway. They might have early on before the fact that Edna was there was known, but they seem to have known.
I guess the thing that got Edna Cintron some attention, you know, from the main press years ago, originally, was that she thought maybe someone would rescue her, like a helicopter or something. Because she was just standing there in this hole in a building, you know, almost a quarter mile from the ground with helicopters.
Yeah, standing just as close to the edge as she could get away with to make it seem more likely that they'd be able to grab her. And they probably could have if they weren't, you know, just
told to stand down
putting on the problem themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Because,
you know, there could have been microwaves or who knows what else.
Undoubtedly.
So you've been trying to get in touch with some of her survivors. Is that right?
Yes, I managed to reach her husband, who told me it was really weird talking to a total stranger about his wife. So I should write to him and send him information. So I've done that now. So once he gets that, I hope he'll get a hold of me. I've also been in touch with the baker from the Italian bakery next door, because they had their own little flower shop called Sweet Williams Floral that was right next door to Marone's Bakery, which was the last Italian bakery in what used to be Little Italy.
Oh, yeah, okay, interesting.
Yep, and that closed in September of this year. So, and the bakery had been there since like 1950-something. But it had a William and Edna Sintron's flower shop next door to it from 1976 till 2001, after the tragedy and all. He never really opened it back up to bother with.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of their
hobby
they had instead of a child. What did who?
I'm sorry, say again, instead of a child?
They had their shop. They minded their shop.
So what did he have to say about Edna?
I sent him to my website to see the video, Meet Edna Sintron, and he said it's weird as shit, but that's her. Yeah, he could tell.
And I guess the point is, for some reason, some people are convinced that she didn't exist, just like the planes didn't exist or something.
Yeah, well, I call it 911 nihilism, or it's a
nihilism,
reductionism,
that
everything is fake, that nothing is real, nothing exists, and their number one is Edna Sintron, because, she's a brave, and they don't really believe in bravery. That's something for comic book heroes. If you run across bravery, you know that's fake. Part of their sort of reasoning that's going on there.
Well,
plus that
shame.
She blows so many holes in the official stories and in the non-official stories that still depend upon great heat to make buildings turn to dust in midair.
But I mean, her story, it has been, and hasn't it been, the New York Times or something like that?
There was a long article about her in the Columbia Journalism Review
of
their graduate school.
Yeah, why did they,
it was some lady who was a student there who came to one of Edna's memorials at her floral shop. It was a picturesque place, and it attracted a lot of media. Up there on 116th Street, where they could, Mid-America live.
Columbia Journalism Review writes about other media.
I've got it listed on my site, and I tracked the lady. I haven't contacted her personally, but nowadays she's a bank manager in New Jersey.
Well, the point is that her story, in a way, has been told, so it can't really be denied.
Yeah,
and the implications
story
of her
resonates.
Story are so huge, because it just begs so many obvious questions that point to high-end weaponry.
Not only high-end weaponry, but a high-end energy source that could just as well be, replacing oil and making our lives much easier without, having to be on an energy grid, because this is a wireless fuel source.
Like cold fusion, maybe.
It is cold fusion. That's what happens. This molecular disintegration that started, Judy Wood shows it's still going on.
But there's no cold fusion. There's only oil, and there's no biodiesel. There's only oil. And the other thing is, there's peak oil. And so we all have to live like peasants. And, I just thank God that the Mormon cookbook publishers had the courage to to publish this novel about peak oil.
Oh, yeah.
Telling us that we're all going to die because there's no such thing as cold fusion. And, you know, there definitely aren't, you know, tons of Mormons working out of BYU who were Daddy Bush's chief cold fusion investigator. there's no such thing as cold fusion.
Well, Edna Cintron proves different because she's standing in a field of Hutchison effects, beams that are wilted and bent or missing, beams that have no rivets in them, but the rivets holes are there, you know, like they weren't pulled through and torn, but just kind of the rivets disappeared and the building came apart from lack of rivets. When we see the major fall happening, there's a lot of completely, you know, normal length looking beams flying through the air, but they just don't have any rivets in them anymore. The rivets got poofed. And you see that effect in the hole, too. I've done my best to make the highest, clearest looking enlargements of this space that I can. That there is no debris of any shape or size or form, but just this empty formlessness and this big bent beams that kind of from a distance look like a plane a tail or something.
Maybe the Incredible Hulk was up there and he just bent all the steel beams with his bare hands.
That might be. It's just as likely as any of the other X-Men.
Well, because I think we know that Kitty Pryde of the X-Men flew the airplanes because she can, you know, she can turn into a ghost. She can phase through things. And when she drives the X-Men's plane, it can fly through things also.
Oh, well, I'm glad that we finally have an explanation for this
stuff. It's Kitty Pryde and the Incredible Hulk did 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And he must have made the wing marks, too, that looked like they were opened with a can opener.
No, it was Andy Warhol.
Oh! Boy, we're making real breakthroughs here. You know, being constrained by facts, it's so old-fashioned.
Indeed. Well, all right, thanks. Thanks for telling us about. Is there anything else we need to know about Edna, or
no, but go
on?
Visit her and watch her wave. From here on, I turn to the meteorites and the various evidence of cold fusion technology, Archimedes, who got poofed out of history too, but he's making a comeback.
Yeah, so much. I just read something the other day about. Actually, that wasn't news. That was a reference site. I was going to start talking about the Archimedes Codex, but that's nothing new. All right, so YouTube.com/TheWebFairy. What? I don't know. What? What's new?
Yeah, is that they've discovered that bombarding seawater with radio waves makes it burn. That's what one of the videos in the Hutchison effect was showing.
Hmm.
And that's one of Archimedes' inventions that was called Greek fire, and it's been expected that it was just all fictional and all, but it's not. Back then they knew about radio waves.
Isn't it amazing? And I guess, you know, just the, you know, you read stories about you know, Albert Pike and Mazzini in the 19th century talking on the telephone from Italy to the U.S., you know, before Bell.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yep, it's the history's different than what they tell us.
Indeed. Well, all right. Thanks.
Well,
thanks
thank
for
you.
Checking in. There we go. And I guess we'll keep the phones open a little bit longer. I was going to try out a new technology real quick, see if I could just play this We Are Changed Colorado confronts Bill Clinton. Hopefully I can do that for you, play it right off the YouTube thing. So let me get this. Let's see here. And boom. No. All right. Well, that didn't work. But whatever. You can go to your YouTube and type in "We Are Change Colorado, Bill Clinton." That will be pretty interesting. Anyway, we're hitting up 100 minutes tonight. We do have a line open at 1-877-REVIEW-0. Like I did mention, I did have a lot of news I was going to get to tonight. Maybe you can hit some of that up real quick. Top cop says McCain was never tortured. I mentioned this earlier. Is PrisonPlanet.com. They have it from that guy, Jack McLam, who's like head of cops in this New World Order or something like that. And a former Vietnam veteran with top secret clearance says he has personally spoken to numerous POWs who dispute John McCain's claim that he refused to provide information when he was captured. And there you go. But actually, there's another story from another website that had more detail. Oh, by the way, next program is brought to you in part by Delirium Nocturnum. Delirium Nocturnum, the beer from Belgium, for when you need a beer with a cork that will give you violent tremors in the middle of the night. There's a pink elephant on it. It's enjoy that. Dr. Jack Wheeler's To The Point, tothepointnews.com, talks about, he says he knows this guy who, when he was kind of a college kid in Vietnam, he's a Russian kid, translated the interrogations from Vietnamese into Russian. And basically he says that McCain rolled over, every time they were told they were taking him to solitary confinement. They were actually, he was set up in a hotel with two different whores, because his daddy was the head of the fleet in Vietnam. And this is not long after his daddy was one of the, covered up the whole Liberty thing with LBJ and the Israelis when they tried to turn the Six-Day War into World War III. By killing a bunch of U.S. Navy soldiers. But that's basically it. So, you know, T, the source is named T. His father was with the GRU, which is a part of the Russian secret police. They were in charge of the interrogation in torture camps. And the kid was in college and learned Vietnamese and translated and supposedly a bunch of congressmen and senators know all about this. So, of course, it's actually... Oh, and the other thing is that the CIA got all the files right after the Berlin Wall fell when, you know, basically all of the KGB's files are basically being sold off. I mean, that's pretty much what their assets were. And the CIA has tapes... has all the interrogation records in Vietnamese and Russian, all the notes, but also has like the propaganda tapes that McCain made for North Vietnam. Supposedly they got the only copy from the KGB, but you know, I'm sure the Chinese managed to get a copy as well. So there you have that. Let's see what other news we had. I mentioned the secret camp inside of Gitmo. I mentioned Diamond Adams is going to protest the NAU. Let's see. Oh, ACLU has another action alert out on FISA. President's trying to legalize his illegal spy program. Congress should just say no. Go to ACLU.org/safefree. Indoor check total 411.info for the link. There. And you can always call the switchboard 202-224-3121. That's Congress. And bitch at your representative about illegal spying. We are going to wrap up the program. And I want you all to have a great evening. Keep listening to Revere Radio Network. Keep hitting that donate button. Peace.
I was a highwayman. Along the coast roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive. I was a sailor, I was born upon the tide, and with the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner round the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I am living still. I was a dam builder, lost a river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that great tomb that knows no sound, but I am still around. Always be around and around. I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again, or I may simply be a single drop of rain, but I will remain. And I'll be back again and again and again.